Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, December 20th, 2022. The Senate moves to take up the just-unveiled $1.7 trillion omnibus government spending bill, trying to get enough Republicans in the Senate to join the Democrats to clear the 60-vote filibuster threshold. The bill includes $45 billion aid for Ukraine in fighting its war against Russian forces, more than the president's request, a ban on the Chinese company-owned TikTok app being put on U.S. government phones, changes to the Electoral Count Act, an effort to prevent another attack like the one on the U.S. Capitol January 6, 2021. Some of the items under discussion but not making it into the final bill, protections for Dreamers, the name given to undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, an Afghanistan refugee resettlement program, and making it easier for illegal cannabis businesses to have access to banking and financial services. The omnibus spending bill will need to pass the Senate and then the House and be signed into law by President Biden before the weekend to prevent a government shutdown. Coming up, we hear from supporters and some opponents and talk with a CQ Roll Call budget and appropriations reporter. On immigration, border security, and Title 42, which has been used to deny asylum claims by migrants on COVID-19 public health emergency grounds, all eyes on the Supreme Court, which has put a temporary hold on rescinding Title 42 ahead of tonight's deadline set by a lower federal judge. House Ways and Means Committee considering whether to make public half a dozen years' worth of tax returns from former President Donald Trump and his businesses. And Afghanistan's ruling Taliban bans women from universities. We'll get the State Department reaction. Now to the omnibus spending bill. It was released overnight for the rest of the fiscal year 2023, which runs to the end of next September. It's $1.7 trillion. That breaks down to $858 billion for defense spending, $773 billion for non-defense discretionary spending, that $45 billion in funding for Ukraine. That's $8 billion more than President Biden requested. It's also $38 billion in emergency disaster assistance. The bill needs to pass the House and the Senate and be signed into law by the end of Friday to avoid the government shutdown. That's when the current federal government funding expires, known as a CR or continuing resolution. This morning, the Senate leader is speaking about what's in the bill and the way forward. First, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York.
I have good news. With days left before Christmas, Democrats and Republicans have reached an omnibus agreement completed at 1:15 a.m. early this morning. In the very early hours of the morning, Chairman Leahy and Ranking Member Shelby released a long-sought, bipartisan, bicameral omnibus appropriations bill for fiscal year 2023. The omnibus is the last thing we have to do to close out a very successful 117th Congress. And we've taken another step, a major step, towards reaching the goal line. After a lot of hard work, this package represents an aggressive investment in American families, American workers, and America's national defense. It'll give our troops a raise, make health care more affordable for millions, and it fulfills the promise Democrats made to defend democracy at home and abroad through the ECA. It was no easy feat to piece this bill together. And if our amazing appropriator staff needs a quick power nap at their desks this morning, no one's going to blame them. I want to thank Chairman Leahy and Ranking Member Shelby for working on this omnibus for months without cease. I can't think of a more fitting send-off for our two esteemed appropriators than this. If this omnibus goes down as Senator Leahy and Shelby's final legislative contribution as senators, then I say, bravo, thank you, well done. I also want to thank my colleagues in the House, above all, Speaker Pelosi and Chair DeLauro, for their relentless work. The clock is now ticking until government front runs out this Friday. Between now and the end of the week, the watchwords for the Senate will be speed and cooperation. For the information of senators, we're going to get going on this process today. Members should be ready to vote to lay the omnibus before the Senate as soon as this afternoon. We must finish passing this omnibus before the deadline on Friday when government funding runs out. but we hope to do it much sooner than that because we're mindful that a nor'easter is barreling down the East Coast on Thursday and Friday. Let me say this again. The sooner we pass the omnibus, the better. We have until Friday before funding runs out, but we ought to get it done well before then. I hope no senator will stand in the way of us finishing our work. We cannot afford a shutdown.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor. The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, also speaking in favor of this omnibus spending bill.
President Biden's proposal for fiscal 2023 was a massive real dollar increase for liberal domestic spending and a significant real dollar cut for our national defense. Thanks to the tireless work from Senator Shelby and a number of our colleagues, the government funding bill that we'll be taking up this week does exactly the reverse of what the Biden administration asked for. This bill will significantly grow the baseline for defense and significantly cut the baseline for non-defense, non-veterans after inflation. A big real dollar increase for the defense baseline and a big real dollar cut for the non-defense, non-veterans baseline. This is an impressive outcome for the Republican negotiators, and more importantly, it is the outcome that our country actually needs to keep helping Ukraine and our other friends, to keep out innovating and outcompeting Russia and China, and to keep our brave men and women in uniform equipped with the best training, tools, and technologies the world has ever seen. The administration's original version for the federal budget, starving defense while shoveling cash into miscellaneous domestic spending, was so out of whack that Democrats in Congress actually joined us in rejecting it. Then there was some discussion that Democrats might only agree to make sufficient investments in our armed forces if they got to jack up domestic spending even higher as compensation. Of course, that didn't make any sense either. The Commander-in-Chief's own political party does not get to take our troops hostage in order to demand even more unrelated goodies.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor. The director of the White House's Office of Management and Budget, Shalanda Young, writes of this omnibus spending proposal. This bipartisan funding bill is an important step forward, bringing both parties together to make progress on critical priorities for our country. As with any compromise, neither side got everything it wanted. But this legislation is good for our economy, our competitiveness, and our country, and I urge Congress to send it to the president's desk without delay. She specifically cites funding that the White House supports for cancer research, making communities safer, veterans, and for supporting Ukraine, natural disasters in the U.S., recovery, and child care and education. A group of Senate Republicans, though, opposed to this omnibus bill, held a news conference. Here is Rand Paul of Kentucky.
I brought with me the omni, 4,155 pages. When was it produced? In the dead of the night, 1:30 in the morning when it was released. Now, people argue that it's conservatives' fault. It's, you don't have the Christmas spirit. Somehow you're holding up government. Well, whose job is it to produce this? The people in charge of spending. The people in charge of both of the parties. When did they know that this would be necessary? Well, it's in the law, September 30th. You got 9 months, almost 10 months, to produce a plan, to have a spending plan. They weren't ready on September 30th, so they voted themselves 90 more days. They weren't ready last week either, so they voted themselves another week. And now we have it at 1:30 in the morning this morning. But what's the clamor? The clamor is to vote. Vote now. Let's get it done. Why are you standing in the way of spending? Well, the real question is this. What is more dangerous? What is more dangerous to the country? $1.1 trillion in new debt, or as Republican leadership likes to say, oh, but it's a win. It's a big win. We're getting $45 billion for the military. So which is more important? Which threatens the country more? Are we at risk for being invaded by a foreign power if we don't put $45 billion into the military? Or are we more at risk by adding to a $31 trillion debt? I think the greatest risk to our national security is our debt. The process stinks. It's an abomination. It's a no good, rotten way to run your government. $6 trillion entity, and they want 24 hours to process this, and then they want to go forward.
Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, at a news conference. Aidan Quigley is a budget and appropriations reporter for CQ Roll Call, and he writes, Democratic and Republican appropriators released a sprawling $1.7 trillion fiscal 2023 omnibus spending bill early Tuesday morning, setting up a race to the finish line for the 117th Congress by the end of this week. He joins us now by phone. Thank you so much. Sprawling is right, over 4,000 pages. What's in it?
Yeah, so it's definitely a big bill. Overall number is at $1.7 trillion. Most of that is in for regular appropriation for the fiscal year that started in October, and around $85 billion of that is supplemental funding, which is split between Ukraine and disaster relief. So it's a lot of appropriations funding with some additional supplemental on top.
Negotiators spent a lot of time coming up with these levels. How does it compare to the current fiscal year?
Yeah, so we're seeing a large increase in defense spending for a total of $858 billion. That's about a 10% increase over the last fiscal year. Both sides of the aisle arguing that with the war in Ukraine and a growing threat from China, that more funding for defense was needed. We're seeing a smaller increase on the non-defense side, but both sides are highlighting different things that they got in the package and they're happy with. So we're definitely, it's looking like we're heading towards passage this week.
In addition to the money, because this is one of the final bills that's making it into law this year, there's a lot of other stuff that's been thrown in. Could you go through some of that?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot tacked on here. The highlight would be the Electoral Count Act, which kind of clarifies that the vice president just has a symbolic role in counting the votes, clerical role. He or she cannot unilaterally toss out any electoral votes. And it also raises the threshold for objections from senators and representatives. So that's the main thing that's attached. There are other provisions, a range of them, including some horse racing legislation that Senator McConnell pushed for, among others.
A lot of things tacked on to this bill. There were a lot of other bills that some senators, some House members wanted to get into the bill that were not put in. For instance, Afghanistan or immigration or cannabis. Can you go through some of those details?
Yeah, so the Afghanistan refugee legislation that Democrats are really pushing for did not make it in. Senator Schumer is blaming Senator McConnell for blocking that, as well as some 9/11 health legislation that Senator Schumer is pushing for. He said today at the press conference that McConnell stood in the way of that legislation as well. McConnell's response was basically that a lot of legislation was not able to, didn't make it in. But at the end of the day, he's happy with the omnibus, especially the defense spending level.
We're talking with Aidan Quigley from CQ Roll Call. I want to read one more line from your article. Appropriators had planned to release the bill Monday afternoon, but language Democrats were negotiating internally regarding the FBI's headquarters relocation project caused a delay. What was this one small problem?
Yeah, so this held things up for a little bit and led to the late release. Basically, it's a debate over whether the FBI headquarters will be based in Virginia or Maryland. And Maryland's delegation was pushing for a change to some guidance that had come out recently that would have prioritized, which they say would have prioritized Virginia's chances of getting the headquarters. So there's a small change to the language that was added, basically that they're going to consider it a little more. It's pretty in the weeds there, but essentially Maryland's delegation is saying that they increase their own odds of getting the headquarters with the new language that's in the omnibus.
And finally, by all indications, does this bill have the votes to pass the House and the Senate?
Yeah, so it's starting in the Senate, and it will pass the Senate. The timing of that passage remains a little unclear, as we're currently waiting for a procedural vote today. But it does definitely have the votes to pass the Senate. House, it should be a little closer, but it should also be able to pass the House comfortably.
Aiden Quigley covers budget and appropriations issues for CQ Roll Call. His story's at rollcall.com and on Twitter at Quigley Aiden. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi with a statement today. It is urgent and necessary that we enact this omnibus package so that we may keep government open and delivering for America's families. She's a Democrat from California. The House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, Republican, also from California, who is running for Speaker in the next Congress when Republicans will have the majority, was interviewed Monday afternoon on Fox News when the framework of the final omnibus bill was known. And he talked about that, funding the government through an omnibus for the entire fiscal year versus the alternative of another short-term continuing resolution to fund it for perhaps a few more weeks.
You've got these anonymous Republican Senate voices, people who are afraid to speak on the record. They're saying that Kevin McCarthy really favors the omnibus spending bill and really doesn't want to get down to business right away. What is your unequivocal response to that?
That's a lie. Hell no. Why would you move forward? And you know this better than anybody, Larry. They're going to raise another $100 billion on your baseline. They're going to take away our opportunity to secure the border, to become energy independent. Because when these appropriations bills get passed, remember what's happening here. Leahy and Shelby are writing it. Two senators who won't be there in 15 days. We now have a stronger hand we can play with the Senate and with the administration because we will have the gavel. Do a short-term CR. Put it into the end of January, into February. We're willing to go forward. Larry, one of the best things we were able to do in the country was when it was divided, to lift the ban on selling our oil and gas outside of America. And you know when we did that? We did that in an appropriation process when Obama was president, able to negotiate. We can do that same thing now. But what the senators are using, they're using a few people who say they're not yet decided upon what they're going to do for speaker. So they're saying, well, Kevin doesn't know if he'll be able to get it done. They're trying to say that. We can get the job done because I'll promise you the baseline will be lower. It won't be increasing, cause more inflation. We'll take care of the military, but we'll also make sure our border's secure, make sure we have the ability to have energy in America, all the above. We'll go after making a parents' bill of rights. And yes, we will hold this administration accountable. Why would we do this in a weakened state? Because if they pass the Omni now, where they put a continuing resolution just right up against Christmas to make people take a vote with thousands of bills, pages they cannot read, and then lock that in the next year and go just to a CR, when we have an opportunity not just to curb spending, but to put our policies in place at the same time in a divided government.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, candidate for Speaker in the next Congress, on Fox News Monday afternoon with Larry Kudlow. A group of 13 Republican House members, including some from the Freedom Caucus, are promising to retaliate legislatively against any Republicans in the Senate who vote for the omnibus spending bill proposal. They put out a statement that reads, "We are obliged to inform you that if any omnibus passes in the remaining days of this Congress, we will oppose and whip opposition to any legislative priority of those senators who vote for this bill, including the Republican leader. We will oppose any rule, any consent request, suspension, voice vote, or any roll call vote of any such Senate bill, and will otherwise do anything in our power to thwart even the smallest legislative or policy efforts of those senators." Wall Street today, the Dow up 92, NASDAQ up 1, S&P up 3. Wells Fargo will be paying $3.7 billion to settle allegations by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that the company mismanaged auto loans, mortgages, and deposit accounts. It's the largest penalty ever levied by the CFPB. From Associated Press, Dateline El Paso, Texas, suspense mounted at the U.S. border with Mexico on Tuesday about the future of restrictions on asylum seekers as the Supreme Court issued a temporary order to keep pandemic-era limits on migrants in place. Conservative-leaning states want a reprieve, although it could be brief, as they push to maintain a measure that allows officials to expel many but not all asylum seekers. In a last-ditch written appeal to the Supreme Court, they argued that an increased number of migrants would take a toll on public services such as law enforcement and health care, and warned of an unprecedented calamity at the southern border. The AP article goes on, Chief Justice John Roberts granted a stay pending further order, asking the administration of President Joe Biden to respond by 5 p.m. Eastern Tuesday. And that's just hours before restrictions, known as Title 42, were slated to expire on Wednesday. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, independent from Arizona, speaking on the Senate floor today about a bipartisan immigration proposal that she was working on with Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina that did not make it into the final omnibus spending bill being voted on this week.
Right now, we're experiencing a dangerous tipping point. The combination of an unsecure border, an overworked and under-resourced Border Patrol and Protection Force, and never-before-seen levels of illegal immigration, asylum seekers, and coordinated smuggling efforts have completely ruined an already broken system. To make matters worse, Title 42, the public health order that stops some migrants from entering our country, may soon expire, allowing thousands of migrants to enter Arizona, Texas, and other border states without the proper procedures, plans, or infrastructure in place. Let me be clear. This is a humanitarian and security nightmare. Already, our border towns can barely keep up with the demand from the overwhelming levels of immigration. In San Luis, a small community of roughly 37,000 people right on the Arizona-Mexico border, the fire chief recently told us that three of his five ambulances are used solely to care for migrants in need, leaving only two ambulances for the entire local community on any given night. The city of Tucson has already accepted over 15% of its total population just in migrant releases since April of this year. And in Yuma, the threat of street releases persists every single day, including today. With thousands of migrants coming to our border and seeking asylum, our overwhelmed Border Patrol agents are now additionally tasked with processing asylum seekers, taking the agents away from their important work of patrolling the border, apprehending illegal crossers, and stopping cartels, drugs, and smugglers. The consequences are plain to see. The mayor of San Luis even recently reported seeing migrants traveling along inner city highways because Border Patrol was too overwhelmed to apprehend them closer to the border. While towns like San Luis, humanitarian organizations across our state, and our brave women and men in blue, green, and brown shoulder the burden of a failed system, Washington continues to politicize solutions. Politicians are retreating to their partisan corners instead of examining the problem for what it is, not what one party or the other party wishes it was, and focusing on finding meaningful solutions. Some refuse to acknowledge the need for increased security measures at all, while others have a singular view of what kind of security is sufficient. Some want to welcome all who come to the border into our country, while others want to keep everyone out. And a few want to defund the very agencies who were tasked with enforcing our immigration laws, or underfund the very humanitarian organizations that provide vital services and care for the asylum seekers our country has always pledged to help. As someone who has seen all the challenges at our border my entire life, I know these are all false choices.
Senator Kyrsten Sinema, independent from Arizona, today on the Senate floor. Republican Congressman James Comer of Kentucky, who is expected to become chair of the House Oversight and Reform Committee in the next Congress, was interviewed this morning on Fox News about immigration and Title 42.
Congressman, good morning to you. How do you think the Biden administration is going to respond to this temporary pause by the Supreme Court? I think if they were being honest with themselves, they would admit that they don't want Title 42 to end, even though they've been advocating for it.
Well, I don't know that they do want it to. I mean, this is the Biden border policy, an open border policy. This is consistent with where they've been from day one. Over the past 2 years, this administration has turned the Border Patrol into the welcoming committee. They want more people to roll into the United States. They believe this is part of their social equality campaign to fundamentally change America. They don't care about what this is costing the American taxpayers. They don't care about what this is doing to the crime rate, all the fentanyl, all the human trafficking that's pouring into our country. They don't care. They want to continue to pander to the left wing to make it appear that they're welcoming and they're making, you know, this country open to anyone in the world who wants to go there. So I give my hats off to the attorneys general who are doing the right thing, doing everything in their ability to try to do what this administration has failed to do, and that is to secure the border with the one tool that we have in the toolbox, Title 42, to send people back to where they came from.
Congressman James Comer, Republican from Kentucky, the incoming chair of the Oversight and Reform Committee on Fox News Tuesday morning. Title 42 has been used to deny migrants the right to seek asylum on the grounds of preventing the spread of COVID-19 2.5 million times since March 2020. Homeland Security Department says it is continuing preparations to manage the border in a safe, orderly, and humane way when the Title 42 public health order lifts. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you get your podcast and on the C-SPAN Now mobile app. A story at USA Today: after years of speculation and legal action, the public may soon get a look at some long-sought information, Donald Trump's tax records. The House Committee on Ways and Means meeting Tuesday to decide what to do with the Donald Trump tax records it obtained as a result of a legal battle that ended with a Supreme Court decision paving the way for their potential release. Committee Democrats, now in the majority but soon to be in the minority with the next Congress in January, saying they need Donald Trump's tax documents to perform oversight of the IRS's federal presidential audit program. And the committee now has 6 years' worth of the personal records and the business records, 2015 through 20. Ahead of today's meeting, which was closed session due to the sensitive nature of the information, the committee's ranking Republican Kevin Brady of Texas spoke at a news conference.
We are unified in our concern that Democrats may today move forward with unprecedented action that will jeopardize the right of every American to be protected from political targeting by Congress. We have seen news report that the committee may consider moving forward with making public some or all of President Trump's private tax returns and those of affiliated businesses. Let me be clear. Our concern is not whether the president should have made his tax returns public, as is traditional, nor about the accuracy of his tax returns. That is for the IRS and the taxpayer to determine. Our concern is that if taken, this committee action will set a terrible precedent that unleashes a dangerous new political weapon that reaches far beyond the former president and overturns decades of privacy protections for average Americans that have existed since the Watergate reforms. Our current law was put in place to prevent presidents and members of Congress from targeting political enemies through their tax returns. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court chose not to intervene to stop the flimsy and admittedly partisan Democrat efforts to target former President Trump for purely political reasons. The result is that longstanding privacy protections for all taxpayers have been compromised. Going forward, the majority chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee will have nearly unlimited power to target and make public the tax returns of private citizens. And not just private citizens, political enemies, business and labor leaders, or even the returns of Supreme Court justices themselves.
Congressman Kevin Brady, Republican from Texas, ranking member on the Ways and Means Committee, at a news conference today with other Republican members of the committee before the markup session, which the public part of it was all about 2 minutes, and then the committee went into closed session to consider what to do with those tax records from former President Donald Trump. A couple of weeks ago, when the Supreme Court cleared the way for the committee to get those tax returns, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi asked what should be done with them should they be made public.
Well, I'm not involved in that. I mean, I don't know what they intend to do. I'd like to know, just as you would like to know. I don't like it, but I think that I give credit to Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Richie Neal. He handled this with dignity. He handled it with its purpose, that is to say, we need to see how this works. We need to possibly have legislation requiring candidates for president to reach a certain threshold that the public has a right to see their tax returns. And so where they go next, I don't know. The purpose is how do we, how does this exercise, which took a very long time, but was upheld by the Supreme Court, the right of Congress to have access to that, to go forward. I think the public has a right to know. That's why we should pass legislation requiring candidates to do that. That's why every other candidate has, except you know who, and who shall remain nameless here. So I would hope that the public would have the opportunity to see it. But again, it's complicated, it's technical, it's legal, and Richie Neal has handled this with great dignity. There have been those in the public who have been saying, he should be doing this and he should be doing that. No, he should be handling it with the dignity that it deserves.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at a news conference December 1st. Again, today, the House Ways and Means Committee meeting behind closed doors to decide whether those tax documents of former President Donald Trump and his businesses should be released to the public. The former president responding Monday evening to the vote earlier Monday by the House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol that recommended to the Justice Department prosecutors pursue Donald Trump on four charges, including inciting or assisting an insurrection and obstruction of a official proceeding of Congress. Donald Trump posting on his social media platform that the committee is a kangaroo court that held show trials by never Trump partisans who are a stain on this country's history. And the former president writes, these folks don't get it that when they come after me, people who love freedom rally around me. It strengthens me. What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. The Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell today asked for his reaction.
You said in a statement yesterday that the entire nation knows who's responsible for January 6th. Given that, do you regret your vote acquitting Donald Trump as impeachment trial?
Look, we were all here that day. I think we're pretty aware of what happened.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell with reporters. The House January 6th Select Investigative Committee plans to issue its final full report on Wednesday. At the White House Monday night, a Hanukkah celebration. It's night number 2 of 8. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden, the hosts. President using the opportunity to speak out against anti-Semitism. Associated Press article includes this. The holiday celebration comes during a spate of anti-Semitic episodes. Former U.S. President Donald Trump hosted a Holocaust-denying white supremacist at his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach, Florida. The rapper Ye expressed love for Adolf Hitler in an interview. Basketball star Kyrie Irving appeared to promote an anti-Semitic film on social media. Neo-Nazi trolls are clamoring to return to Twitter as new CEO Elon Musk grants amnesty to suspended accounts. That from AP. Here's President Biden.
This year's Hanukkah arrives in the midst of rising emboldenment of anti-Semitism at home and, quite frankly, around the world. I recognize your fear, your hurt, your worry that this vile and venom is becoming too normal. As your president, I want to make this clear. As my dad would say, and many of you have said, silence is complicity. We must not remain silent. And I made no bones about it from the very beginning. I will not be silent. America will not be silent.
President Biden at the White House, the Hanukkah celebration Monday night. He also mentioned that the menorah is being added to the White House holiday collection this year. It was built by White House carpenters from sterling silver candle cups and wood saved from a White House renovation under former President Truman. The president saying, this year we thought it was important to celebrate Hanukkah with another message of significance, permanence. In Afghanistan, the Taliban's Ministry of Higher Education banning women from attending universities, both public and private. ABC News reports when the Taliban came to power in August 2021, it made assurances that women would retain many of the rights they gained in the years following the U.S. invasion that expelled Taliban authority. But since then, girls have been banned from secondary school, and girls and women from gyms and parks, and from traveling alone without a male guardian. More from the U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price today.
The United States condemns in the strongest terms the Taliban's indefensible decision to ban women from universities, to keep secondary schools closed to girls, and to continue to impose other restrictions on the ability of women and girls in Afghanistan to exercise their human rights and their fundamental freedoms. The Taliban's decision to close secondary schools to girls last March has had a significant impact on our engagement with the Taliban representatives. The Taliban made promises to the people of Afghanistan and to the international community that schools would reopen. They claimed that this was a matter of procedures and arrangements and would be quickly reversed. Now, we hear the opposite. An order from the so-called Higher Education Ministry yesterday states that women cannot attend universities either. With the implementation of this decree, half of the Afghan population will soon be unable to access education beyond primary school. Afghanistan is already losing more than $1 billion per year in contributions that women could be making to the economy. Now the Taliban have imposed these losses on the Afghan people for the indefinite future. Furthermore, the Taliban have permanently sentenced Afghan women to a darker and more barren future without opportunity. No country can thrive when half of its population is arbitrarily held back. Education is an internationally recognized human right, and it is essential to Afghanistan's economic growth and its stability. This unacceptable stance will have significant consequences for the Taliban and will further alienate the Taliban from the international community and deny them the legitimacy they desire.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price opening up today's briefing at the State Department with reporters. The Pentagon saying it has a variety of capabilities at its disposal after the Air Force last week grounded the entire fleet of B-2 stealth bombers after an emergency landing and fire on a runway of one of the bombers at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. The Pentagon press secretary is Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder.
As you know, the B-2 fleet is not flying due to a recent mishap, and the runway at Whiteman remains closed due to now several days of debris on the runway. So one of the premier bombers in the United States military is unable to fly and unable to even access the runway. What concerns does it cause you that this premier bomber capability, as we sit here today, is not available to the United States military?
Well, the Department of Defense, to include the Air Force, has a variety of capabilities at its disposal, particularly when it comes to our strategic bomber fleet. As you know, we also have the B-52, which is both conventional and nuclear capable, which provides a redundant capability, broadly speaking, when it comes to our strategic forces. And so for any aircraft, certainly, I know that our maintainers work very hard to ensure that those aircraft are available and off the ground as soon as they can. In terms of the specifics on the status of the B-2, I'd refer you to the Air Force. But I'm confident that we continue to maintain the bomber capability that we need to deter adversaries and, if necessary, engage in combat.
Is it any kind of priority to try and get the runway cleared and get the plane back flying?
Again, I'd refer you to the Air Force to talk about the specific status of the runway, but I have no doubt that people are working around the clock to ensure that our capabilities are ready to fly and ready to defend the nation. Thank you.
Pentagon Press Secretary Pat Ryder, an Air Force Brigadier General, with reporters today in the Pentagon briefing room. There are about 20 B-2 bombers in the U.S. fleet. It was first deployed in 1989. And scheduled to be replaced by the B-21 Raider, which was unveiled earlier this month and will take its first flight, according to the schedule, next year. The British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, in office about 2 months, confirming today that his government will continue to provide military support to Ukraine, despite a BBC News report over the weekend that he had allegedly launched an examination of the necessity of military aid at this point to Ukraine. Prime Minister Sunak made his first appearance today before senior members of parliament on the liaison committee. Questions coming from Alicia Kearns, British Foreign Affairs Committee chair, and like the Prime Minister, in the majority Conservative Party.
You've ordered a Goldman Sachs-style review of UK support for Ukraine. The media say this is a sign you'll be less steadfast in your support for our Ukrainian allies. The Defence Chair and I would like you to commit today to unreserved support for Ukraine, no matter the outcome of this audit.
Yes, I wouldn't necessarily read too much into the press reports. I'd look at my actions. I'd say, first of all, the first foreign call I made was to President Zelensky, the first bilateral foreign trip I made was to Kyiv. I've spoken to President Zelensky probably a couple more times since then, also organised for him to speak to the G7 leaders, also the JEF leaders yesterday, where I was at the JEF summit, and committed to maintaining or increasing our military support to Ukraine next year. So those are all the actions to date in the 7 or 8 weeks that I've been in office. Of course we will continue to support Ukraine. I think both what all of us would want to see is Ukraine successfully repel Russian aggression, and it's important that we maintain support but also evolve the support for the conditions that we're seeing on the ground in the battlefield, and that's what I'm keen to do.
Thank you. Turning to Russia's backers in Iran, Obama's greatest regret from his time in power was not listening to his advisers when they told him not to back the Green Revolution in Iran. Today, the JCPOA is failing, the women of Iran are being brutalised, Iran's committing assassinations across Europe and perpetrating war crimes in Ukraine. How are you standing by the people of Iran, and will you now sanction the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as you promised in the leadership competition over the summer?
I think the protests that we're seeing in Iran send a very clear message that the Iranian people aren't satisfied with the path that the government has taken. We stand very much with the people of Iran. I think the treatment of protesters is quite frankly abhorrent. That's why, in terms of actions, this year the Foreign Secretary summoned the most senior Iranian official here to express our view to them, and then over the course of 3 different days, on the 9th of December, the 14th of November and the 10th of October, we've sanctioned over almost 40 different individuals connected with the protests, including the so-called morality police. And on the 14th of December, we, together with international allies, kicked Iran out of a UN commission on the status of women.
And on the IRGC specifically, which you've got.
Yeah, so we already sanctioned the IRGC in its entirety, and typically we wouldn't comment on conscription, on prescription.
I believe you've prescribed them but not sanctioned them.
No, we sanctioned the IRGC in its entirety. The separate list of terrorist organisations that are prescribed is kept under review, and we generally wouldn't comment on prescriptions.
Why won't you comment?
Because we wouldn't comment on processes that may or may not be underway.
It's a frustrating Foreign Office quirk.
Questions to the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak before the liaison committee in Parliament in the House of Commons in London. The questions there are coming from Alicia Kearns, also of the Conservative Party, like the Prime Minister, and she chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee. BBC News describes the liaison committee as a super committee made up of the chairs of 14 senior select committees. C-SPAN covered today's Q&A session in its entirety. It's the Prime Minister's first, and it did cover both foreign and domestic affairs. Runs about an hour and a half. You can find the full video at cspan.org. Also today in the United Kingdom, the Bank of England showing the first images of banknotes with the new monarch, King Charles III. The 5, 10, 20, and 50-pound bills will be entering circulation by mid-2024, and the current ones with the portrait of the late Queen Elizabeth II will remain legal tender, and they'll both circulate at the same time until the old ones go away and the new ones will replace them. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word to get the top stories in Washington sent to your inbox every day. You can subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.